Wondering if you should stay in Illinois or move out of state? Get your copy of Scott Tucker's book, Escape Illinois, Should I Stay or Should I Go? Get your complimentary copy at retirementdakota.com.
Investment advisory services are made available through AE Wealth Management, LLC, a registered investment advisor.
You may have been following the criminal case in Uvalde. It was a police officer down there who was charged with 29 counts of child endangerment and abandonment, and that was for alleged failures of his doing his job in the 2022 school shooting at Robb Elementary School. And then we have, of course, the shootings that are going on in Minneapolis. And I'm going to keep this non-political. I'm going to keep this non-specific. I just want to get the information on how these kinds of cases are looked at from a legal standpoint. And with us to discuss this issue is a friend of the show, Dan Herbert. He is a former police officer and a Cook County prosecutor. He represents, among other clients, police officers in criminal and civil matters, and he represented Officer Jason Van Dyke, you may remember, in the shooting of Laquan McDonald. Dan, is Dan here? Yes, hi, Dan. Dan, welcome to the show. How are you? Happy New Year.
Same to you, Karen. Thanks for having me on.
You see a lot of cases where there's excessive force, right? You know, and that's the case that you handled for Mr. Van Dyke. But it's kind of interesting when you see a case where the law is trying to hold a police officer liable for not using any force. How unusual are these prosecutions?
Well, it's very unusual. And just from my experience, I mean, I've represented dozens and dozens of police officers for excessive force or inappropriate use of force. I represented one police officer in my 26 years as a lawyer for failing to act. And to me, it was a much easier case to prove with respect to the failure to act as opposed to acting in a certain way. And, you know, I think it's easier for jurors to understand a police officer's fair and not acting, as opposed to fair in taking action. So, very rare. And, you know, I don't know if it's appropriate, but certainly with Uvalde, you know, we had 19, just a horrible, horrible tragedy, 19 children that were killed. And I think the politicians just felt like somebody had to be held accountable, and, Officer Gonzalez was the one that they chose.
What was, to your knowledge, what was the theory as far as what Gonzalez did or didn't do that arose to the level of some sort of negligent, criminal negligence or child abandonment?
Yeah, well, the elements of the charge, and we have something similar in Illinois, but kind of a different mental state, which I'll touch on in a minute, but it was essentially that Officer Gonzalez was responsible for these children's welfare, which he certainly was. There's no dispute there. And that the important element is that he acted or failed to act, and then they throw in three mental states, and they're alternatively used, or four actually, intentionally, knowingly, recklessly, or with criminal negligence, placed the child in imminent danger of death or great bodily harm. So the prosecutors certainly went on the criminal negligence. You know, they focused on that one. It's certainly easier to prove. It's a difficult case to prove. The way they would prove negligence, obviously, is to focus on the training. And that is where a big portion of the prosecution's case was devoted to. They focused on the training. I listened to the closing arguments by both attorneys, who, incidentally, I thought did a very good job for their respective clients. But, you know, the prosecutor was basically saying that, you know, we as citizens have a right to expect officers to do what they're supposed to do when we call the police. And he mentioned this several times in his closing. He said, you know, the kids and the teachers followed their training. Gonzalez did not, and he made a big point on that, because the kids and the teachers did do what they were supposed to do. The prosecutors obviously said Gonzalez should have acted certainly at some point. He saw the shell casings. He made some post statements, post-shooting statements that seemed to be a little bit damning towards him, but he saw the shell casings, and one of the lines they used in closing was, you know, the blood told you a story here, and he should have acted on that information, and he didn't. And the jury essentially didn't buy it for a number of reasons, Karen, I think.
Hi, Dan. Patrick Dolan, Karen's law partner. I have a quick question. So does failure to abide or follow your own training equate to criminal negligence? How does the law look at that?
Yeah, well, it's interesting. And the defense kind of made this point, and I thought it was a good point. You know, the defense attorney was telling the jury that, you know, training is not designed to tell an officer, if you don't do this, you're going to jail. Training is designed to tell you what you should do in certain situations. But the only way, really, that that the prosecutors could establish that criminal negligence is to focus on training. Because, again, they are saying that all these police officers are trained a certain way. And if he, Gonzalez, failed to perform pursuant to his training, then that certainly would be evident of criminal negligence.
I mean, it's kind of scary because, you know, we are all lawyers here. We don't do our job. The worst that can happen to us is, you know, maybe we get sued or maybe someone cites us with our licensing commission for being negligent. But, you know, that's the worst it gets. You know, you were a police officer, Dan, and you know, you make a mistake, you could get shot and killed, or you could be sued and have your money taken away, and you could have your liberty taken away, like you've had clients have happened to them. So, you know, it's a difficult job out there, and there's a lot at stake. And I think that defense lawyers like you probably make much of that with a jury. You know, put yourself in their shoes. What would you have done? I mean, I'm pro law enforcement, but I'm also pro good law enforcement. And, you know, it seemed to me that when I was following this case, I thought to myself, if the facts were correctly reported, there were 370 law enforcement officers of one type or another present in the scene that day. And why was this guy the one who's getting charged? I mean, to me, that's common sense that it wasn't just his fault. It was the perpetrator's fault, you know.
I think our leaders are sending mixed messages here. You're kind of damned if you are, if you do, and you're damned if you don't. You know, if Officer Gonzalez had immediately responded and shot this individual, you know, maybe before he had executed these young babies, we all know that there'd be a segment of population that would be calling for him to be charged criminally because he didn't, you know, exercise any other alternatives. And you know, personally speaking, I'm appalled that at the actions of the police in Uvalde. I've been in situations where there's been an active shooter, and yeah, it's scary. There's no question about it. But my goodness, you could not have had a scenario more impactful and more of a case exhibit where you have to throw caution to the wind a little bit, because that's part of what we do.
Absolutely.
You know, I remember when I was a rookie policeman, we had a active shooter at Cabrini Green, and we ran up three floors, and we kind of stood there at the break in the wall, so we had some shielding, and we're kind of like, all right, let's think about this. And we had some old Irish sergeant comes running up, and he said, boys, we can't wait for the National Guard. Let's go. And we went in, and, you know, and I don't know if that was the greatest strategy in the world, but it turned out it was fine. The person's gun was jammed. But, yes, it's scary, but you signed up for this job.
That's
my
right.
My goodness,
yeah.
You have children in there.
We're talking to Dan Herbert. He is an attorney here. He represents police officers. He also does personal injury and some other types of law. Why don't you give out your contact information, then we're going to take a quick break and come back.
Sure. You can go on my website, danherbertlaw.com. Phone number 312-655-7660.
Patrick, you had a question for Dan.
I did. So, Dan, it seems like we know that failure to follow training does not equate to criminal negligence. But maybe with regard to this situation or just more generally, we're not sure, at least I don't know, what he saw or didn't see, what he heard or didn't hear. It, you know, what would the facts need to be to give him, the officer, the, you know, the responsibility to get in there and do something? What do we need to, what do the prosecutors need to show besides training or lack of training in order to obligate that officer to act?
Yeah, it's a good question, Pat. And I actually looked up the Texas statute with respect to that. And it's basically that, that it kicks in your duty to act as if the incident, which is likely to cause death or great bodily harm to a child in this case, and with respect to the statute, if it is happening in your presence. So obviously in your presence is a legal term of art. And, you know, the prosecutors argued that this individual was in their presence because Gonzalez, the shooter, Gonzalez, the police officer, was able to give a description of him and give it a description of where he went. There appeared to be some dispute about how the evidence came out with respect to that. But the prosecutors were clearly saying that you saw this individual. You were able to describe what you saw. You saw blood on the ground. You saw 60 rounds of ammunition that had been expelled from his weapon. That is in your presence. And, you know, obviously the defense took the opposing view and basically said the training doesn't require them to do that. They did focus, and I think, you know, Karen brought up a good point about how there was 360 or however many officers there, and I really think that undercut the prosecutor's case because the defense pointed out, well, you know, there was officers there that didn't leave their car, and they're not charged criminally. You know, at least Gonzalez came to the building. And I think when the jurors heard that, they're like, well, why is this guy being held accountable? And I think they might have looked at it and said, you know, this is just, he's kind of, he's the scapegoat in this case for a horrible tragedy that everyone is looking for accountability, but it wasn't proper in this case, is I think how the jury decided it.
That is kind of my read, too, and it wasn't because there wasn't, you know, emotional testimony. I mean, they allowed family members to get up on the stand, and, you know, and rightfully so, they are outraged and upset and never going to get over this. And obviously, they wanted someone to be held accountable. But again, jurors are good at looking at jury instructions and following the law. And, you know, if the law, cold and hard, doesn't allow you to convict someone, it doesn't matter what the passions are. So you got to respect that,
yeah,
I guess.
I'm sorry, in the testimony, like you said, of the family members had to be extremely impactful. But, you know, in these types of cases, the testimony of the officer is critical. And, you know, essentially, whether it's a failure to act or why you acted a certain way and used force, you need to try as a lawyer or as the client on the stand, you need to try to put the trier fact in the same situation that you were in, and you need to show why you were afraid and why you acted or didn't act.
Absolutely. Let's pivot and talk about Minneapolis. January 7th, Renee Good, a 37-year-old mother of three, was shot and killed by an ICE agent while she was in her vehicle. There are differing accounts, and this issue has obviously been politicized, and I don't want to go there. I just want to kind of analyze what we know from what we see. And Dan, you can lead us through, and if you want to do it through Illinois law, which is probably similar to Minnesota law, as to how a jury, if there are criminal charges, which there probably won't be, or if there's a civil case, how this is going to play out.
Yeah, another horrible tragedy. You know, this was a situation where the victim was apparently out there protesting, and she was at the scene of an ICE operation, and she clearly made the decision that she was going to leave, and she was going to disobey the law enforcement's orders. Now, that doesn't warrant shooting by any stretch, of course, but the officer's explanation is that, you know, the only reason that you could shoot somebody in this situation is if you reasonably believe that that you or somebody else was in imminent threat of death or great bodily harm. I did watch a video. I didn't watch it as if I was preparing to defend the case or try the case as a prosecutor, but I noticed a couple things. The officer originally was standing in between his, I believe it was his driver's side door, and the door was open, and he was kind of in that doorway. The Miss Good backed up her vehicle, and at that point, she kind of put herself in the path of this officer who was in a dangerous spot at that point. He could be clipped by the door, and so to me, I said, well, this is reasonable for that officer to leave this place. And the only way that he could go at that point was in front of her vehicle. However, he had the ability, from what I saw, to get out of the way of that vehicle. Once you passed, he could have got out of the way of the vehicle. He didn't do that. He stood in front of it. And, you know, the policy is, and it's the same for virtually every police department and certainly the federal officers as well. It's governed by the Fourth Amendment, but the policy talks about shooting at somebody fleeing in a car. And obviously, the policy universally is you can't shoot at somebody just because they're fleeing a scene, unless there is a reasonable fear of death or great bodily harm. That's it. And the policy also talks about how it must be, the decision to shoot must be objectively reasonable when all other alternatives have been exhausted. In some situations, there is no other alternative. They're exhausted in a split second. In this case, in my view, in my opinion, the alternative of getting out of her path was not exhausted. And to me, this was a simple case of, you know, the officer, I don't know, he was ticked off that this woman was listening to him. And yes, she should have listened to him. You don't want to put yourself in a situation to make a police officer scared. I'm not condoning Ms. Good's actions. But in this case, the officer, you know, and again, I've been in this situation many times. Okay, you're going to drive away from me. You're not going to hurt anyone right in front of you. That's fine. We'll come to your house tonight and we'll place you under arrest. And that's why, to me, I thought it was an unreasonable shooting.
One final question, and we just have a minute, less than a minute. I know that the Department of Justice is not going to conduct an investigation. A law firm here in Chicago, I had the lawyer on last week, has been retained to preserve evidence and maybe bring a civil case. Is it unusual that the DOJ is not investigating this?
You know, it's not. Unfortunately, or however you look at it, it's very, very rare for federal officers to be charged with a crime. And I think there's a lot of reasons why behind it. I think the federal government feels somewhat insulated from political pressure of a particular community as opposed to a senator or a mayor or a state's attorney or police chief that is, you know, elected by this community. So I think, and I think there is, I don't know if I want to call it arrogance, but it's more of a, hey, we operate on federal law. We'll decide when we investigate and when we don't.
Dan, thank you so much for joining us. Dan Herbert, you can contact him quickly. Where can he contact you?
Yeah, my website is danherbertlaw.com. Phone number 312-655-7660. Thanks a lot, Karen and Pat.
All right, Dan. Take care. Bye-bye.